This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh.
Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz After Show, Nando. This is the jam. What is this jam?
This was played at the end of the episode. This is Pilgrim,
oh,
I think.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Got it.
We haven't gotten into it yet. It's just the opening, but that's what they were playing at the end, the final montage.
Oh, okay. I like it. Kind of like it. Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell. As always, I'm joined by my main man, Nando Blasquez.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Across from me, I'm joined by the lovely Julia Carely.
Hi, everybody.
And I'm also joined for once in his life. Joseph Lebeau.
So nice to be here with you guys.
Thank you for making it. Thank you for making it for once, Joe.
Yes.
I'll fight you, Braz.
That's good.
You're a little late on the year of Flippo here.
And also, in the midst, we have the lovely Marissa Serafini. Hi, Marissa.
Marissa Serafini.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
You're all here this week.
We're all here. Oh, we got some room
excited
in the studio here.
You feel good?
Room.
Yeah. I like it.
Ah, studio A.
Yes.
Julie, big time. Where we belong.
I'll find a way to hit you, Nando.
Julie can't quite reach you with the elbow across
the
studio A.
Fling the knife.
Joe Flippo is kind enough to bring me some scotch. Thank you, Flippo.
Scotch.
I know. Tastes a lot like iced tea.
Yeah. It is remarkable how much like iced tea that scotch tastes
so,
like.
Iced tea.
I don't think it's Irish. I don't think.
Wasn't there an episode of The Honeymooners like that when I'm really dating myself.
I'm dating myself. The Honeymooners so get older and older.
You should have heard the plastic. They just like
Benjamin Franklin once say.
Oh. On the Jack Benny radio hour.
I tell you.
That one bit that he used to do.
Rochester.
Rochester. We do a show called The Blacklist. You know, it's fine. We do a show called The Blacklist, and you shouldn't be lost because we are in episode 3 of season 2 of The Blacklist. Dr. James Covington, number 89. It's a little high. It's a little high to me for Doctor.
I don't know.
What do you mean high?
A little high up in The Blacklist. 89?
Top 100?
So is she in the top 100 for this guy?
This guy!
What are you saying?
He was a badass.
Doctor with a heart of gold. I mean,
so you're saying he should be doctor? He should be like number 214.
Well, I don't,
709.
But even if he wasn't a doctor with a heart of gold, what he's doing by, you know, extracting organs is not.
Give me a number that it should be.
He's not deadly, Joe. I'm just saying he's not deadly.
I don't know.
Well,
killer.
If you compare it to like last week's episode, which was 112, the Monarch Gotham,
where the place
was Monarch Douglas Bank.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was 112. Yeah, I would say maybe this guy. Although that opening scene. That opening scene was pretty freaky.
That's pretty grim.
That was
right
a creepy, creepy ass opening. Them chasing that guy down.
Yeah,
to get his organs.
And the Rastafar guy throws him right in there. He's
done. My mouth the dreadlocks. A good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, slow down.
And you know
let
what?
Me help you out.
I don't think he died. He didn't get killed the whole episode.
Who? Huh. The black guy?
Yeah.
It's a goddamn miracle.
No. Well, he was black too. So no.
He didn't die either.
Two black guys survived.
He didn't die.
No brothers down. No brothers down.
Although he's in jail. Although the second guy's in jail.
That's right. That's true. Hey, let's jump this episode. 30 seconds, quick first impressions. What's your name? Joe.
I'll have a name tag maybe.
Yes.
It'll work out well. I thought it was a good episode. I like where they're going with, obviously, Spader. I'm going to get mad at James Spader. I do get mad. I get frustrated. This is a pet peeve I have with shows about the FBI.
Uh-huh.
When production decides for, I don't know, hours at a time that there are only two people in the FBI. And those two people go into all kinds of places, and there's never any people to back them up.
Like, they're partners. They're checking something out.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation is enormous. We remember we had the tanker ship driving around the Hudson Bay. You remember?
I got
the super secret plastic prison that was
going on. FBI WTF is what you're saying.
I can't help. Lizzie and Ressler were just cruising in places. Should we wait for backup? Hell no. Let's just go in and make some moral decisions. All right.
I will say, once they crack, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. I want to hear what Julianna said, but once they did crack into the, once they found the secret downstairs compartment, and there's no, and Aram says, that doesn't show up in the blueprints. And they go down. That's your, like, call for backup.
Isn't that the time? Like, your phone comes out. Hey, we should send more of us.
We're super secret compartment where no one knows exists?
Yeah.
Let's just us two
go
down.
Well, don't forget, we're getting ahead of the game, but don't forget, they were trying to save a life, they thought, before, by 5 o'clock.
They were on a time crunch.
Call so for don't
backup.
Forget that.
We'll be down there. Backup should be on the
way.
Julianna, first impressions.
I like this episode. I like the Blacklister. I like all the layers that were sort of revealed throughout the course of the show. Not my favorite Lizzie episode, gotta be honest, but maybe I'm just being harsh. I said this last week, though.
You have a favorite Lizzie episode?
You're so hard. Never mind. Go ahead. Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Hey.
Huh? God, no.
Huh? Something to say?
No, Lizzie. Okay. Lizzie's great.
She's not my fave. And she's not redeeming herself anytime soon.
Scotch.
So I said this last week, I think it hits home again this week. I do think the writers are doing a pretty good job of marrying the Blacklister of the Week story with the running stories of our main characters.
Sure.
That was lacking. I said this again last week, but that was lacking for me in season one. It felt very disjointed, very disconnected. So I think they're doing a much better job this season of marrying both.
I agree with you. The approach has changed.
Like
we're going to write an overarching narrative, and then we'll put our Blacklisters into that.
It all sort of fits in.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
In an almost seamless sort of way, which there was such a disconnect last season for me between the Blacklister of the Week and what was happening in the lives of our regular characters.
I agree. High five, writers.
Well, we talked about this last week when some of us were gallivanting on Larry Ellison's yacht. How?
Yes.
That's rough.
Yes, Larry won't let me. He won't return my calls.
How, you know, that's one of the things that John Bokenkamp and the team talked about is really wanting to have still have your procedural Blacklister of the Week, but still have your serialized plot sort of weave through. So you do have exactly that, Juliet. So this is very much intentional, and you're seeing this the writer's labor bear fruit in the form of an excellent story.
And they can think me appreciative.
Yes. Nando, what about you? What do you think of this episode?
I like this episode. I love a good opening scene. Mm-hmm. There was a couple in season one that I really remember because they were really, really good. It was very like a horror scene, pretty much. This guy getting chased down, and you kind of, you know, got, you know, when the Good Samaritan came out and they just injected him. Next thing you know, he's on a gurney getting taken in. It was very creepy. I love that we're finally getting to see a little bit of Tom, even if it's just a dream sequence. We haven't forgotten about that. I loved seeing what's his name, Paul Reubens' character, Vargas.
Mr. Vargas.
Very, very interesting character. And the one thing that I'm sure we'll touch upon is, you know, last week we talked a lot about the dilemma of Lizzie. You know, the greater good, either giving up, Naomi so that they keep the money, so that Berlin's operations are dead, or continuing the war by doing this exchange. And there seems to be a greater good with this Blacklister that ties in. So we could talk more about that, but just pretty much the fact that this guy, ultimately, as creepy as that opening scene was, I mean, toward the end, it was a nice little twist that he was actually kind of a good guy. He was actually
like
punishing.
A Robin Hood.
He was like a Robin Hood, a medical
Robin Hood of organs.
I actually
stealing organs and giving them to the poor.
Yeah.
Boom.
On my way here, I was actually thinking this guy actually would make a really good character for a TV show. Somebody doing, who's taking
care
of criminals.
It's time for moral ambiguity.
Yeah, I just think, I honestly think that it would be a really interesting TV show based on a character like this, who actually has a racket where he is treating criminals this way, like saving criminals' lives to benefit other people, but, you know, has that little, like, he could repossess organs, or he's got these criminals paying him, extraordinary amounts of money. To stay alive. It's just, I don't know. I find this character really fascinating.
I kind of like that twist too. That's something we've never seen before.
Nando's pitching shows.
Like that twist we've never seen before of not just harvesting organs illegally, but just, you know, putting them up for rent.
Sure.
I haven't seen that before.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that. We did that with a movie.
Yeah, there's a movie. But we'll talk about that in a second.
Let me tell you what it's about.
I actually like the episode a lot. I think that what I realized while watching this is back to what I was saying last week about sort of them, you know, these first two episodes really densely packing this plot and unraveling it. I mean, all, you know, densely packing the first two episodes of plot and then unraveling it throughout the season. Mm-hmm. It occurred to me that this season is entirely different from last season in that, you know, they did the pilot. And then, like, 6 months later, they had to shoot episode two. They didn't know whether or not the show was going to get picked up or whether, I mean, they knew pretty early it was a hit. But then, you know, as it goes with first seasons, Nando, like, you do your pilot and then you wait for 6 months and you shoot a bunch of shows and then you kind of wait for the network to pick you up. Now, the show's a massive hit. They're very secure that they're not going anywhere. You know, they have taken a massive nosedive. So it gives the writers room to be able to really relax and plot out a season. Mm-hmm. What I felt on this third episode is I really felt like I was in good hands. I felt like, okay, well, I don't feel like I did last season that they may be kind of making this up as they go along. Like, who knows? This feels like they've thought about it over the summer. They've got some time. They've mapped this thing out. So I feel like it's going somewhere. And I really, there's a sense of like I'm in good hands. So I like that.
But there's no throwaway episodes, in other words, because that's the way I felt about a 22 episode season. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, oh well, we got another 10 episodes to shoot.
It's episode 11. Who knows what's going to happen?
Let's just throw something in.
We're still
going to
get some throwaway episodes.
Yeah, this is only episode 3 here.
But at least it feels like that we've got enough stuff to really to work with here. They've introduced enough things for us to sort of unpack. So I like that. I'm very interested to see where that goes. I want to get into the episode itself, but before we do that, I want to. Have a word or two from our good friends at Dish Network.
Wherever you live in this great country of ours, Dish can bring you great TV. From the big city to the farmlands, high on a mountain or low in the valley, Dish delivers all the great movies, shows, and sports you can handle. Monthly packages start at just $19.99 a month for 12 months. This is your day, America. Get Dish and get thousands of TV shows and movies on demand and free installation in up to 6 rooms. Visit dish.com/afterbuzz. That's dish.com/afterbuzz. Limited time offer, 24-month commitment and credit qualification required. Cancellation fee and other restrictions apply. Requires a clear view of the southern sky. Call for details.
Did he just say we can get Dish for just $19.99 a month?
Yes, he did, dear.
And what do we pay for TV now?
A whole lot more than that, dear.
And why do we do that?
I don't know.
Get Dish. Go to dish.com/afterbuzz. That's dish.com/afterbuzz.
Big shout out to Joe Sanfilippo and Julia for doing the voices in
those little couples.
It was such a lovely thing there.
Dr. Braswell,
two actors, their finest. Joe and Joel. Where are we? So now it's time.
I don't know. Where are we?
We are about to dish about the Blacklist.
What happened?
Scotch.
No. So let's get into this episode.
Jesus.
Let's get into this episode. So we saw some new faces and some familiar faces, and it really started off with after our wonderful Cracker Jack opening scene, we got what was revealed to be a dream sequence, but at the time we did not know it was a dream sequence, where we saw Julia's man, the very hunky Tom Keene.
And be bearded.
And he bearded Tom Keene, looking like, I don't
he's
know.
He's such a copycat.
He's been on the run.
Such a copycat.
Yeah. Scruffy and fabulous.
All right. Uh-huh. Take it easy over there.
Hey! I said the same thing!
It was Lizzie's dream, not yours. Relax.
your dream's on cable.
And it was actually very, very, very convincing. But then we see Spader come in, Red come in, and, well, actually, what does Tom say to Lizzie?
Tom, he comes in, what does he say? Oh, he sort of tells Lizzie that Red's only using her to get to Berlin. Once he gets Berlin, then he's going to kill her. And he brings up all these questions that we've all been asking. You know, what's up with the fire? What's the truth about why he turned himself in? What's the truth of, where's Naomi Highland? And so he asks all these questions, all our burning questions. Yes. And then Red comes in and pop, pop.
Yep, in the subconscious, Lizzie talking in her subconscious, and Red comes in and pop, pop, pop. But speaking of subconscious, there's that one little bit that we all, I mean, we're not the one, but there's that one little bit where Red says
there was
to her,
a little bit of sex up in this thing.
He says, what do you really want, Lizzie? What do you really want?
As they pan up her legs.
I mean, I thought I was the only guy reading to that. I rewound it and looked around the house. I'm like, is that me?
I think that this speaks to your worldview in general. I know most things are about sex, but is this about sex?
I can tell.
I was the only one who didn't get church, that.
And I'm thinking to myself, is this about sex?
So I came in, I asked Joe. Joe's like, totally about sex. Banana's like, I didn't get it.
I don't know.
I didn't get it.
Well, let me tell you about sex.
You didn't see the leg?
You didn't feel anything?
I guess I didn't pay attention to the leg. I don't know.
Let's ask the internets.
Yes.
You guys tell us.
YouTube
that
and
scene,
iTunes. Did
that have some sex on it? I think it had some sex on it.
It felt like it had some sex on it.
I'd like a blacklist with some sex on it.
I'm not going to say the sex was on the side. I think the sex was right on top. No, exactly. The sex was on it.
All
right.
Okay.
Okay, so that happened.
That happens.
Y'all want sex on that?
It's really good. It's really cool. So for a second there, I thought, you know, because we have to reveal, and I'll get to some predictions later, but we have to reveal who Lizzie's source is, because there was that tease last episode that Lizzie may have an informant feeding her stuff.
I thought it was.
Oh. Who did you think it was?
Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. I thought, you weren't here, so I'm sorry. Maybe Larry Ellison told you who the. Did he have a prediction?
No, he didn't have anything to say.
All right, good. No, but I thought for a second there, Tom Keene, I thought this was real. I'm like, Tom's alive and he's the source. Somehow they're working. I'm like, no, it's dumb. Everyone's like, oh, it's a dream. So that was just me. Do anyone else think it was real? Or do we all kind of know?
Oh, come on.
I figured it was a dream pretty early on.
Fair enough. Okay. So that happens.
The only one that felt like James Spader didn't want to be in that scene? Like, he came in and just like, oh, shit, I got to do a dream sequence. Okay.
Someone who's shipping my daughter. Yes.
Right? I'll do it. Fine.
I'm sure he's
contractually obligated. Fine.
I'm going to say he's fine with everything that happens in the show, Joe.
I'm just saying.
So then we finally get back to headquarters and back to the task force headquarters, right?
Well, before that, Lizzie, little paranoid Lizzie, thinks she's being tailed by creepy motel guy.
Yeah, I was going to come back to that. But let's deal with that now.
On her way to the task force.
It did.
Or on her way to meet Red, actually.
We can go this linearly. Yeah, like, so we saw that in the task force. We saw the creepy kind of maybe hottish.
Totally hottish.
Yeah, hottish.
With
like,
an accent.
Accent, hello? Dude. Like, you know, who, you know.
Is he hot?
Yes.
I know why Julia likes this show so much.
I don't
this
understand.
Episode.
You don't know what high guys look like?
I have a clue.
Okay.
Just ask me. So she frisks him.
She frisks him.
So what, was there some sex on that? Was there?
she frisks him.
It was a very slow frisk.
And he's clean. And that happens. And so, you know, we think she's paranoid. And we'll get back to the we'll just talk about it now. But we know later in the episode.
She's not paranoid.
He's not paranoid. He comes back and there's a little flirty action.
Definitely a little sex on that.
Let me ask you guys a question. Yes. I've never lived in a motel. It's not something I've done.
Uh-huh.
But lots of
hot people.
That's what I was going to say. Uh-huh. The people that are living in that hotel are a lot cleaner and sexier looking than I would expect.
I don't know what motels you frequent.
I just assumed, maybe wrongly, that would be primarily prostitutes and vagrants. But apparently I'm insane.
Well, in the world of TV, the hotels
FBI
the motels.
Right. All
it's all FBI, hot FBI agents and hot snipers.
Just kicking it.
That's what happens on NBC.
We're
and
motel
I'm
neighbors.
Totally fine with it.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So we find out the guy is actually up to no good because he's got a gigantic high-powered rifle, which he's checking the sights on, and he looks like he can take out anything with that rifle. Again, very, very reminiscent of the Tom Keene reveal. We don't know, or the Apple reveal, or we don't know if this person is here to protect Lizzie. Is she here to take Lizzie out? Is he here to watch over Lizzie? Is this person brought by Red? Like, all these questions asked, but I think the assumption is supposed to be that he's here to do no good to Lizzie, but I don't believe that because he could have already taken her out by now, so we'll see. We'll get to that later. But so we get back to the task force headquarters, and we see the team in action, and we see the introduction of our girl, Xavier Navarri.
Samar Navarri.
That's
what I mean.
That's what I said. Samar Navarri.
Samar Navarri.
Can I have Samar? Can I have Samar that, please?
Can I have Samar Navarri, please?
Yes.
Got it. I'll never forget it again.
Okay.
That's not true at all. Salami newbie.
Can we please get the name right?
No.
No.
Samar actually, in Harold introduces Samar to the task force. And
there'll be no questions.
Yes. We'll get to Harold in a second. But everyone seems to be not too happy to see her, except for my man, you know, Aram.
Aram has a crying.
He's like, oh, you're tall.
She's tall.
You're tall.
I'm half Jewish, half Muslim. No, I hate myself. Why don't we hang out?
Yeah. Oh, you're tall. I like that. Yeah, great, that, right? Great line. So he's smitten, but wrestler and Lizzie not so much.
I saw some sex on that. I saw some sex on that.
So that introduction is made, and then we do get the. Go ahead.
I like the little pissing contest between Navabi and Keen a little bit, of just the back and forth of the questions of how does an Iranian wind up working for Mossad? How does an FBI wind up working for Red?
Yes.
Back and forth, like one upping each other a little bit.
Yeah.
But no questions were ever answered.
No.
Harold wouldn't have that.
And this is the time when I get mad at TV, because like you cut away from those scenes, and we all accept that. But in real life, those scenes don't get cut away from. No. Like, here's a bunch of weird questions. I have a bunch of weird questions.
All right.
And no, that's not what happens.
No.
She continues to get weird.
Mm. It does get weird. I like her, man. I like
She leans against the door like a maniac. Nobody leans against the door.
She's
that
got
hot.
The lean.
Oh, boom.
And the leg cross.
Oh, she's
the arm fold.
Bang.
Like, yeah. Oh.
Y'all didn't know this door was hot, did you? Because boom, here I go.
Yes.
You guys give me crap for one comment on Tom.
She's something
and
else.
Listen to this.
I'm sorry. There's a guy at a motel right now.
I like to go
with a sniper rifle who's
deep
hot.
Cover. With I got nothing.
No.
Okay. No.
Deep undercover.
Yeah. I like. Yeah. I like,
yeah.
All right. So she's there, and then we get the introduction of Dr. James Covington, and sort of seeing what he's up to, put through Red. Red sort of, you know, gives the information on Dr. Covington and sort of says what he does and how he does it, which seems believable. But the way he says it, even when he gave the description of what he does, it didn't seem like it was task force worthy to me. I don't know. I mean, it felt like, you know, he goes to these criminals and he you know, gets their organs and he gives them organs in a black market, and that's what he does.
He's on the blacklist, and that's what the task force does. If Red says hunt down this blacklister, that's what they
sure,
do.
Sure. But now knowing what we know at the end, that this was sort of like a little Red, you know, gave him this blacklister for his own, you know, means.
Well, yeah.
But as always, but. He just never really ranked high.
You know what I like about this episode? One of my favorite things is that it's really kind of graying up Red a little more. Like, this episode, you're not going to walk away from this episode going, Red's a good guy. Like, this one grays him up a lot more, which I like. Yeah. I think that's a good thing. I think they need to do it.
Well, yeah. I kind of agree with you, because, I mean, after looking at this guy's dossier, they realize that he is servicing criminals. And really, that's his biggest crime, I think, that they have a reason for that task force to go after them, is that he's servicing criminals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yet, what's interesting about the whole case is they never really seem to interrogate him about the criminals he's worked with. They never try and get information out of him. They just stop him for what he's doing, which is harvesting organs illegally, doing illegal transplants, which is not the job of that task force. So there is some confusion. I can understand the confusion.
Is it one of those things where we're led to assume at the end that they were going to sit down and have some serious
But just based on what we've seen on that episode, it didn't look like that was ever their intention of capturing this guy. They were capturing this guy because of what he was doing with the illegal transfer.
I got to be honest with you. That is a particularly deep-seated nightmare for me. Like my mom's always like, are you going to put donor on your driver's license? Because we talk about that kind of stuff all the time. But no, because I saw that one show that one time where the ambulance drivers were harvesting guys who had donor
cards.
But,
you know, it is that urban legend all the time. You hear that story about that person walking down the street and all of a sudden they black out and they wake up in a bathtub with, full of ice.
So, this episode actually makes total sense to me in that regard. Like, if you're going to go after, like, an urban fear, that is something I totally fear.
It makes a tremendous sense. I mean,
my organs are crap. You don't want them.
I'm going to give it all the scotch you drink.
From people who were already dead.
No, he wasn't. That's what
the medical examiner was
That's
doing.
What the medical examiner
yes.
said.
Well, that's
but
the only
when they was. Stopped paying.
That's the only
that's
person
when he took them back.
Okay, but that's all we know. But we don't know what else was going on. And you know, it's kind of open ended. So we're dealing with one medical examiner, right? The one guy. But it doesn't mean that we weren't dealing with six or seven other medical examiners in other places all around the country. We don't know.
Well, they had to be in close proximity because they only had 30 to
we
90
still
minutes.
Still don't
depending
know.
On
they
the...
were following leads. We don't know. Covington could have had like three or four different guys.
In
on
any
the payroll.
Event, it's scary.
I agree.
I was going to say you're scared. It's fine. It's scary. Like, I'll give a quick plug to a colleague
I got you.
Of mine.
I got you.
a quick plug to a colleague of mine who I'm working on, Scott Carney. He's an investigative journalist. I'm working on something with him right now. He has a book called The Red Market, which is all about sort of illegal organ trafficking and people who do this and steal organs and steal skeletons in the black market. And all this ish is 100% real.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very scary. It happens a lot, and the organ trade is a thriving business. So this is ripped from the headlines, or ripped from Scott Carney's book. Ripped from the red lines. I don't know. Scott Carney, the red market. But Joe, yeah. So this is a big deal. So they go out. They go to find him. Of course, Aram. I get the names, man. I gotta get this right. Aram sort of breaks down sort of what he does, and who makes the distinction that they are renting them as opposed to the wife of our first victim. That's right, because they do the interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out the whole story of like how we were high on the hog, and of course we can afford it, but the second he couldn't afford it, we find out this is a repossession situation. Mm-hmm. Much like the movie with Jude Law and Forrest Whitaker.
Repo Men?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
much like something I might love, same thing, though.
Yep. It's set in the not too distant future.
Yeah,
not a very good movie, though.
Oh, no.
Not a very good movie.
No, could have been better. Should have been.
It should have been good.
Yeah,
very violent.
Oh, I love it.
A little gross.
When they pulled out an organ, it was grim.
They did,
but they did put it in plastic bags, which I thought was very sterile.
So this was very reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
But you know, I gotta just before we move on to Paul Rubens and some other folks in here, I gotta say, Cooper, man, I'm on Cooper watch. I'm really rooting for my man. I want Harold Lennox to have some more stuff to do. And he's just not. I wrote down.
Repo.
I mean, with the exception of his wonderful chat with Lizzie, I'm starting to write down the one liners he has.
Wait, do it. I want to hear you do it.
He has his line. The first line he says when someone asks, I'm not going
to do it. You gotta do it.
When Aaron says, you know, these organs are being repossessed, and his brilliant line was repossessed for non-payment. Like a house or a car.
I propose we have a list of other things that can be repossessed. We can fill this in.
Yes.
Or a boat. Or a motorcycle. Or a diamond ring. Or a jet ski. An ATV.
Is there a more...
furniture in your house.
Is there a more throwaway line?
Your television.
Is there a more throwaway line? Like, I'm waiting for Harold to come in with a zinger, with some good Yale-trained acting. The repossessing organs. Repossessed. Like a house or a car.
It's like a vocab test.
I'm like, oh, jeez.
It hurts so much.
And then this next line, when we're talking about the big guy, you know, he's like been brought on. what's his name?
BB.
We've been trying to indict him on racketeering charges for years. Thank you. That's it. That's all we get.
I just love...
That's the whole episode.
I love how the FBI has your picture, all your criminal activity, where you were 10 minutes ago, but we can't bust you. We know everything about you. We know everything you've ever done.
But think of it this way. If they busted him, he wouldn't have a line. He needed to not be busted so that Cooper had a line.
He's the head of the crack elite task force. Super double secret elite crack task force. He gotta have something else to say. No. He did put Lizzie in the office, and he did do that wonderful scene flip on. What do you
want to
say?
We haven't even seen him live.
It was painful.
No, you liked it.
No, I thought it was terrible.
Oh.
I've never felt so uncomfortable watching a scene. I'm like, come on, you guys. Like, no one came to work.
We're talking about when he brings Lizzie in the Harold Cooper brings Lizzie in the office to talk to her about
her psyche.
Then she leans in with that incredible wrestler. Oh, he's not talking about wrestler. He's talking about you. Oh, yes. Me. Beautifully telegraphed, the whole thing.
Oh, Lizzie.
It was just like, so many opportunities for moments. They're like, nope, we're not taking a moment now.
Well, you know what was interesting about that scene, too? No pills this episode.
I know.
No pills this episode. Instead of putting in a question about wrestler, it was about Lizzie.
I know, yes. And all of a sudden...
I'm looking pretty good right now.
The pills will be
all of a sudden, wrestler's on this moral high ground. Yeah. Wait a second, you're a pill popper.
Exactly.
What are you talking about? Calling Lizzie out. Yeah. It's not the Lizzie Keene I knew last year.
The Lizzie Keene I knew last year.
No way.
Well, last year you weren't popping pills, dude.
I just love the idea conceptually that the two messed up agents that are both under psych eval, that are both being looked at by the shrink, are left all alone to go do whatever they want with no backup, and no, they're answering to no one. So we're the two crazy ones. Yeah, absolutely. They gave us guns. Yep. Well, go anywhere
Cooper,
yep.
Cooper made it very clear.
He doesn't believe in the psyche of LBS.
He says, they recommended, you know, some time off of paid leave, but I'm not putting you on leave.
Nope.
But I've got my eye on you.
You're living in a motel. I respect that.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. Okay, so let's move on from that. So we're clearly, you know, we've clearly got some problem areas with Harold Cooper. At least I do. I don't know if I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm. I think clearly not.
Okay, so there's that. Hopefully that. So then let's get back. We'll put a pause on Covington. Let's just go jump into what Red's doing. Because before that, Lizzie does want to, I should mention this, Lizzie does call Red up and ask to borrow Mr. Kaplan. And this wonderful scene, we get some more Mr. Kaplan.
I love every second of Mr. Kaplan.
Mr. Kaplan needs her own show.
She does.
I will watch a show with Mr. Kaplan and Dembe all day long.
All day.
Mr. Kaplan, Dembe, and Mr. Vargas.
She handles herself. Yeah.
I don't know. Kaplan Misters. Mr. and D. I don't know. Mr. Vargas, Mr. Kaplan, and D.
Mr. Cap and Mr. D.
Two Misters and a D.
Mr. D.
Mr. Kaplan, Kate, as we like to call her.
I love that she's sleeping with whose sister was she sleeping with?
She's a lesbian. I love it.
I'm just saying, like, she either came out or
how could I forget I was sleeping with her sister?
Yes.
Like, oh!
Yes.
You know, we got the same sort of, like, little taste of Mr. Kaplan and her personality. Last episode, we just get a little bit, and it stands out amongst all the scenes in the entire episode this week and last week. It was like, oh, there she is. I hope that just makes this a regular thing, and that
the more we see, like when we see Mr. Kaplan, we know we're going to get a little bit more of her.
I hope so.
I love that because every time we see her now, we get a little bit more insight into Mr. Kaplan.
And she's fascinating, and she just plays it. I need to find out the name of that actress because she's awesome.
So,
okay, Susan Blow. I'm going to say her last name wrong. Susan Blomart. Blomart.
Yeah, let me try it.
It's B-L-O-M-M.
Susan Blomart.
Let me take a swing at messing this up with you.
No, but she does so well. And you know what? Next to Spader, I think she's holding her own against Spader. I have to say, she's like, right now, for me, actress-wise, she's number two right there.
Well, I like them, too. And even that picture there, I like them because they're both super close talkers. You know, Spader will just get right up in your grill and say something. He'll take another step into your grill and then say something else. And Mr. Kaplan does that, too. She kind of looks up at him, and they, like, almost kissing when they talk, and it's good stuff.
They just have so much chemistry. They have more chemistry than anyone else on this show together.
Yeah. What? More than Lizzie and Wrestler?
more than Cooper and anyone?
How can you say these things?
No. So let's get into it. So we have this whole sort of Berlin subplot, because it looks like, Red is still trying to get the jump on Berlin, and he's got his right-hand man, or not right-hand man, but his other accomplice,
Nico.
the worst. Nico.
Yeah. And a couple other dudes.
Yeah, and the other guys. We don't want to know these guys.
Yeah.
JP.
And so it appears that, I mean, I don't know. Do you want to take us through? Do you want to explain this whole sort of side? Anyone want to explain this sort of side thing?
Well, it seems like Red's trying to make a deal overseas. I think with Indonesia, he's dealing with a minister.
Yes.
And Nico is against it because I guess he knows that Red doesn't have enough footing there, and Berlin's making a bid and feels that they would lose the bid anyway. So Red insists that he's going to invest a lot more money on equipment to make this deal go through. So we see that initial scene with Nico. And then when Nico is talking to these other two guys, I didn't write their names down, but for all intents and purposes, it's really all about Nico anyway. We see this Mr. Vargas come in, and he's kind of like this Bond villain type, you know? I mean, Red says it perfectly. He's kind of like a character, villain from a Bogart movie.
Yes.
Smokey character from a Bogart movie.
Does that hair even look real?
That was awesome. He kind of looked like
a little bit like Penguin does in Gotham a little bit, you know? Right. And Paul Rubens just plays it perfectly and sinisterly, and he has a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the three gentlemen, Nico and the other two cohorts that seem to be equal, but we know it's all about Nico. And we get to see Nico, you know, who seems to be loyal, but I kind of saw that a mile away. It was just a little too much. It was pretty obvious that Nico was obviously the one that was playing both sides and setting up the other two cats. And so we get to see Red at work, and I think two big reveals was that Red was in on it all along. This was a plot to drive Nico out to show if Nico was really loyal.
She was really loyal,
yeah, which he wasn't.
But it also serves a beautiful purpose of scaring the living crap out of the other two. Also, it puts everybody on notice. Like, number one, you're testing Nico, and if he passes, great. If he doesn't pass, then you get rid of him. You know you've exposed the weakness, and you've reminded the other two guys that you do business with, I'll kill everybody.
But you got to be on your toes with Red. When you're working with Red, you got to be on your toes.
Exactly, and I think it was more of a, at that point in the game, it was more of a show of display to the new guys who Nico was sort of saying, like, you know, Red's going soft and this is what Red's doing. And they're like, I don't know. But then then Red's like, actually, I'm not the one who's going soft. I'm ahead of everyone.
Yeah.
He's dead. You guys are with me. I thought that was very
Nico
cool.
Nico is pretty badass though, wanting to get Red killed though. It was a pretty good move. Unfortunately, Red was in on it from the start. So that's why he needed
Nico,
to steal his own fate.
He could have been an up and comer.
But I would also like the whole, all of Nico's like, you're getting slow. You're getting old, Red.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, am I?
Wow.
But the big thing that I loved was, of course, Nico can't live after defying Red like that, so Red kills him.
But
Vargas starts going like, oh my god, blood. It starts freaking out.
You know I can't handle
blood. No, I hate the bloody stuff.
So I really want to know more about...
pass out.
I want to know more about this Vargas guy.
Let's unpack the Vargas. So first of all, Vargas is obviously played by Paul Reubens.
Yeah.
The beloved Paul Reubens, as we know, as Pee-wee Herman and some other things. Really, it's mostly Pee-wee Herman. and he's great.
Don't forget Buffy. You brought Buffy up earlier.
Buffy, of course.
Greatest death scene in the history of cinema, with the exception of The Untouchables and Sean Connery.
And some work in a small movie theater, which we won't talk about.
Unfair.
That was...
It's not! It happened! I'm not being unfair. It happened.
Low blow.
I love
Pee-wee as much as the next guy.
Not as much as he likes Pee-wee.
Stop pulling this off.
Was that a joke? I thought I was the master of the bad puns and jokes. All right. So Paul Reubens. look at that. Paul Reubens shows up, and he's got this great wig, and he's great, you know.
It's not a great wig.
I'm great character wig. It's a great sort of character wig, I should
say. Great bad wig. Unlike Lizzie's bad wig.
Right.
Intentionally bad.
Red talks about his sartorial splendor, which is great, sort of referring to his dress, meaning he's sort of in impeccably dressed, but as a joke, he means it in sarcasm. He's a great character, but we get the sense of, like, we don't know who he is, and he's kind of a badass, and he's kind of looming, and he's really this dark thing, which you weren't buying, Joe.
I was so grateful at the end that it turned out that it was all a con, and he was working for Red, because I'm like, if this show is trying to sell Pee-wee as a genuine badass.
Paul Reubens, I'm sorry.
And like at some point or another, I stopped it. And I'm looking at TV. I'm like, no, please don't do this. Please don't do this. And I was so grateful.
Well, you know, he reminds me of a bit of Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3. Kind of like, you're supposed to be the super villain, but you're really not.
Yeah.
Yes. So it kind of rings like that.
Spoilers.
I didn't say anything else. It just reminds me of Ben Kingsley.
At this point,
that's
it's
all
on
I
you.
Said.
It's fault, but your own.
I didn't say what happens in it. I just said it reminds me of Ben Kingsley.
But I have a question for you on this. But I'm so confused. So is he a complete? Is Mr. Vargas a complete fabrication and brought in by Red to sort of do this thing? Or is Mr. Vargas a real person, real arms dealer who Red had turned? I mean, was he really working with Berlin and Red got to him? Was he brought in by Red to pretend like he worked for Berlin? Was he a complete... Like, this is what I'm confused about, and I get confused a lot. Like, can anyone help me out on that?
He seems pretty loyal to Red to go through all this hoopla to be a quick turn from Berlin.
But I just missed that reveal at the end. Is he a real guy, or was he just some plant?
No, he's
a real guy. I mean, they have the whole exchange about how he hates blood, and we talked about how many times do I have to say this? Right. You know I hate this stuff. You got to give me a chance to leave the room first. Get him a chair. Guys, get him a faint. There's a relationship there.
And you know that he doesn't want anybody that will turn. His whole thing is loyalty, this whole thing. We found out it's amazing how many jobs he had before he became a super criminal. But the 15, you know, do you think there's a chart that the writer's room has where, like, jobs that we've given Red? So that we can make sure that we don't give him another summer when he was 15.
There's nothing like a Red. I mean, if you gotta go, you can get a nice Red James Spader monologue before
you go.
To see
on your way.
The moment he's like, I got a story for you. I'm like,
oh, you're dead.
He's dead.
when I was 15.
Oh, uh-oh.
It was, I hated it. But my father asked if I'd given my word.
Yes.
But that's a great monologue, and that's a great story. Monologue. I don't think he'd use anybody that he could flip. That does, he wouldn't want that person.
No. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's that. So that was a really cool sort of thing in there that we saw, and it's very clear that we'll see more of Mr. Kaplan. Mr. Vargas, and Mr. Kaplan.
And Mr. and D.
That's Scotch, man, I gotta tell you. That really the number on me, Flippo. Thank you. No more Scotch for me.
Scotch.
No.
Scotch from the good people at Lipton.
I love Scotch.
Thank you.
There we go. Yes, thank Cheers. You, Marissa.
So I think we'll definitely see more of Mr. Vargas, right?
I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's Paul Rubens.
Because he's awesome.
He's Paul Rubens.
So let's jump
and
back.
And they've given him some depth already with that, yes. that last scene. So we'll see more.
Yeah.
And also sort of adds to the list of, like we said, the Mr. Kaplan, these people who dip in and out, who have these sort of backstories that we can...
Don't forget also from that scene, because the whole idea that Nico was on was that he didn't think that Red could get that deal with that minister
right.
in Indonesia. And then we find out the punchline of the whole thing that's related to Covington is that the minister wasn't a fan of Red's and probably wouldn't have given Red the account, but he happened to be gravely ill and needed a heart transplant, and his conduit for getting that heart transplant all of a sudden was occupied or busy, or he couldn't,
with
he couldn't
the
get
FBI, the FBI. Getting busted by the FBI.
Because it had to be Covington. So there was Red's, kind of like last week, kind of like every time we see this was Red's motivation for getting the FBI on top of
and
Covington.
And it's also, we just get a glimpse, one step back, of a giant chessboard, like the rest chess, the Red Reddington chessboard. Like, this is Doctor over here needs this. I need to get rid of this guy to get this, and then we'll bring in Pee Wee, and then we'll do this. Like, he's really. I mean, he's got the chessboard going. So we see that. It's like, you know, as we see Lizzie has her own big board, and we talk about how much we love the big board. Red's got a big board in his head. Like, it's he's got a big, giant board of all these master moves here. And that's just really impressive to think that he's that many steps ahead of all these moves to be able to get to whatever end game he is going to get to, which will soon be revealed at some point.
Yeah.
Because he's working all these angles and all this, all these underworld contacts and all the FBI and pulling all these puppet strings, presumably for some end goal. I mean, he's turned himself to the FBI, presumably to get to something. So we're still, that is the overarching thing we're still dealing with in the Blacklist here.
Like, and yet this is the second week in a row he's dealing with a suspect, the villain, the Blacklister of the week is somebody who works with criminals, who does provide a service for criminals. Right. Even though Covington's morals are very different than the bank's was, he still seems to be hitting the criminal, like, shopping network, so to speak.
Yeah, he'll go on like this. The underworld, where before season one is a lot with the criminals themselves.
Yeah.
We've seen now in week three, he's hitting the where the criminals shop and live and thrive.
Well, it's the same thing they did in season one. It's all service people. It's all people who provide a service.
But like, the service people last season were more like assassins, though.
Yeah,
higher.
But again, they were still service people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not actually, they don't have actual plans and schemes. These are guys who are functionaries.
We get the criminal's bank, we get the criminal's doctor.
Yes.
Next week, the criminal's dentist.
Yeah.
I think there's not
the criminal's trash guy.
In 3 weeks.
Who takes out the criminal's trash?
Yeah,
right?
I know. Who takes out the criminal's trash? Who does that?
The blacklister number.
The criminal's life insurance agent. I don't know. You know.
It's we're going to cover everybody in the underworld here in the Blacklist.
Write your policy.
Maury. Blacklister number 75. Maury.
Life insurance.
Nothing's more deadly than a
life insurance broker to the criminal underworld.
Real estate agents, you know, they're just going to go for everybody.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll see.
These are the people in my neighborhood.
So let's jump back to that. Let's just finish up the Dr. Covington thing. So as we talked about earlier, they went to the guy's wife and got the information about Dr. Covington, found out this is a repossession situation. They told Harold Cooper. He said, this is a repossession situation.
Like a house or a car.
Or a car.
Or a boat. Or a motorcycle. Or a diamond ring.
So Wrestler and Lizzie Keene are hot on the case. And they do track down our guy. They do a little sting operation, right? They first go to the corner.
Yep.
Yep. And they turn that guy. That guy looks a lot. That actor is familiar. He's like a weird poor man's Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
Which is sort of not a very cool thing to be, I guess. I mean, Paul Giamatti's an amazing actor.
He works. He's
got to go. No, I just meant physically, is what I meant. I'm just being a dick.
Nice. Meaning to Paul Giamatti and this guy.
You know what? Wow. I would love to have that guy in here because I'm sure he's wonderful.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to come now.
No, he doesn't want to come.
He's a European little man.
They can all be like hot motel dwelling assassins, can't they? So
Ooh, let's get that guy in.
Yeah, let's get that guy in. So he finds out they set up a sting operation with this guy. They get a pig's heart, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they get the guy who we saw at the beginning of the episode on the motorcycle to lead them to Covington, which doesn't quite work out.
I cannot imagine how that guy was able to make Lizzie and Wrestler in that ginormous government-issued Suburban.
That was almost an unintentionally comical scene. It's like, he's like, he made me. He's like, oh. He's like, you're in that tank. He's like, let's felt in that old.
Well, like, and then she was also so inconspicuous, literally running out.
Yeah.
Don't let her spot me.
And then
the foot race after
the foot chase. I love a foot chase as much as the next guy.
If one guy's on a motorcycle and the other person's on foot, I'm going to bet on the guy with the motorcycle. Yes. Pretty damn fast.
I love that the guy in the red car opened the door because there's always somebody opening the door in traffic just randomly. Yeah.
And it was just to give him a second chance to run to catch up to him, which they still couldn't do.
And there was no helicopter. There was nobody else on the scene. Yeah. Just Lizzie and Wrestler, the only two people that work for the FBI.
The good news is they were able to, our boy Aram was able to get enough information to get an approximate location, right?
Five block radius
of where Dr. Covington would.
Now, five block radius in, are they in D.C.?
Yeah.
That's a fairly densely populated five block. I'm just worth pointing out.
We've poked enough holes.
So we should leave it alone?
Let's just
finish the job.
We love the show. We do the show. We've already hung a big suspension of disbelief on this thing. You talked about the FBI agents.
I should leave it alone now.
You talked about
enough said.
Cooper. We've heard you and Cooper, Joe, enough. We talked about Lizzie Keene. So we talked about not seeing sex juice or whatever.
What?
What did we say? What are you calling it?
Scotch?
Sex on it.
Not having sex on it. I don't know. I'm getting way off track here.
Wow.
So we go in the five block radius, and Wrestler and Keene find the building. They find the trap door. They go downstairs, and they make a shocking discovery, as the promo said. Now, again, props to the NBC promo department because they get me every time. But I saw that in a preview. Lizzie makes a shocking discovery. I was like, what's this going to be?
I wanted, hanging frozen bodies and body parts. Man. That's what I wanted.
I didn't get that.
I got it.
So we got a couple kids.
Cartoons.
So we realize in the moment that actually he's a Robin Hood, as we said before. He's doing the experimental surgery he did that we talked about earlier was him taking adult lungs and putting them in children's lungs, and he's trying to save kids, and that's what he's trying to do. Mm. And he's just getting these dirty criminals because they're criminals. Who cares? In order to fund his operation, which is pretty nice down there, well funded operation down there. Oh. And so Lizzie and Wrestler are faced with the dilemma of taking him in or letting the kid...
In the middle of surgery.
Surgery hands.
Like, yes.
Kill me if you have to. I didn't need any of that. Like, just Lizzie, let him do the surgery. I need the debate between Wrestler and Lizzie.
And even seeing
anyone buy that? Like,
no.
We can't let this guy. Come on.
And even seeing, they didn't really show too much of it, but even seeing the parents of the kid, they didn't look like criminal parents or they didn't look like.
They just looked like
very normal looking people. Yeah. Middle class.
Non-criminal.
Yeah. Non-criminal. Not the kind of people you'd find loaded.
Covered in sex juice. I mean, these were nice people.
Which I think adds to the whole. What he's doing is a good thing. He's not doing this to some rich kid. It's not like Chauncey and Matilda are out there waiting for their child to be healed.
In season one,
Chauncey and Matilda.
I don't know.
Take down a blacklister who was about to inject a kid with something that was going to save him, but she shot him anyway.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yes.
So it's moral dilemma number two for Lizzie Keene. Mm-hmm. The exact same moral structure of the setup, and she has chosen. Left the first time, right the second, mm-hmm. right the first time, left the second, doesn't matter which. So now we're depends on your moral bend, I guess, here, but she's 50% either way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm watching this, I'm going, I think I've seen this before.
Never know what Lizzie's gonna do.
You're not the Lizzie Keene I saw last season.
Yeah.
That exchange, we talked about that.
But, again, kind of like I said from last week, is a greater good concept over here on whether she arrests this man for doing good for these kids, even though he's also keeping criminals alive. extortion or not. She's also keeping criminals alive. And I think what was interesting, she's asking Ressler that same question, like, should we take this man in? And she ends up siding with Red. She ends up feeling like the decision she made was kind of the decision she went along with Red for. I believe that so was the line that was mentioned.
Right, and that's the action of that scene, right, is to show that Liz is skewing more toward the gray.
Yeah.
And Ressler stands back there with his hair on very tight. And he doesn't understand why, how he can. We just shut these things down and kids die. That's how it works. I just felt like it was such a blunt instrument, but I understood. I understand where they're going with it. We're showing that Lizzie's changing. We're showing she's growing.
Mm-hmm. Ressler's wound pretty tight. He needs a pill or two.
He needs a pill or two.
Yeah, this guy a pill.
No pills.
This guy's pills. Somebody.
No pills.
He's wound a little tight. Relax, little wrestler. Air's not too tight, man.
But one thing we forgot to mention is two key things we forgot to mention, probably a lot more than that. But two things we forgot to mention is the scene with BB and Red.
Oh, it's
very cool,
so
scene.
Cool.
Yeah.
That was cool.
You know, and BB, like, you know, this guy, I mean, I get it. He needs a heart. I mean, the guy is huge. He's got the oxygen tank. He's
but
got
he's
the
so
bib.
Undeserving. He's
That's
so undeserving.
Point, right? Yeah, you know, the whole thing.
He's indulgent.
So.
Yes.
So Red plays him a visit, and then to get some info, and then he does the move where he gives him the drinks, and the drinks have something in it that may give him
a heart attack. Yeah,
the heart attack, or may give him an erection as well. Is what
oh
Red
yeah,
mentioned.
That's
yeah,
right.
He gave him Viagra. Viagra. I think, right?
Yes, yeah, he gave
that's
Viagra.
What it was. I forgot that.
It's not a good.
He
idea.
Didn't say Viagra, but pretty much it was Viagra.
I didn't want to say
something with a bum ticker, right? Is that what
yes,
he said?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's right.
I wanted to say bum ticker.
A bum ticker.
Look at you. You're fat with a bum ticker.
Extra. Yeah.
So I like that scene. Mm-hmm. And then, so obviously, I just want to jump to that. So let's jump ahead to one of the final scenes in the episode where we see this kind of big reveal where we see Red after he takes down, after his wonderful monologue, and he takes down Nico, and everything all seems to be all is right in Red world. Mm-hmm. His criminal operation or his underground operation seems to be restored. He goes off and he pays, his ex-wife Naomi a visit. And it's not, for a moment there, he walks in and you're surprised that he's seeing her because there's that moment where we thought, are they going to see each other? What's the deal? What's their relationship? What's mm-hmm. happening here? And then he sees her and they have that look, you know, they're going to embrace. Are they going to hug? Are they going to kiss? And she gives him a big old smack.
Good
and,
one, too.
Yeah.
And there was no sex on that.
And there was no sex on that.
There was no sex on that.
I agree. We can all agree on that.
No sex juice. No sex on it.
Nothing was there.
Yeah.
So, and she starts like just dropping plot points, like she starts dropping questions, you know, like does she know and all this, like, you know, did you tell her? Like what I can't remember the exact questions. We know the questions that Naomi asked at the end because I have them, but I don't have them here in front of me. I have no notes, by the way. This is why I'm such an a-hole.
Why do you keep looking at the computer then?
I'm trying to find these notes. I have no idea what anyone said or what anyone's name is.
I might have written it. I was just looking something else.
Naomi asked him some specific questions. I'm gonna look.
Does she or was that in the previews for next week?
No, she asked.
Oh, was that in the previews?
Yeah, I don't think. I think.
Oh, okay. Then
they said that you look different.
Not as different as you.
And then walk, wang, and then long shot of Red's face as he stood there and made he spattered it and then they moved on.
Right.
You might be right because I saw it on Hulu. Yeah. I don't remember
I'm
at
sorry.
All.
I'm sorry. That was in the previews.
That's in previews for next week, I think.
Yeah. That's going to be all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, there it is.
But I know that people were talking about, like when we were talking about the whole exchange last week when they did the exchange so Red got Naomi back.
Yes.
The fact that he was quiet. Yeah. I know somebody wrote on YouTube that they felt that he just didn't know what to do with her. You know, he's just kind of like longingly. I want to look it up. We didn't really do shout outs for iTunes
that could
or
be sort of prediction
YouTube team. Yet. That could be predictions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I find it, I'll bring it up.
Vague,
but thank you. Somebody
very
had a really good point.
Very vague.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into some news and gossip or tickety-tick news.
AfterBuzz TV news.
That pretty much makes up the entirety of the episode in a kind of linear, non-linear way. We spend a lot of time on sex juice and Cooper and stuff. But
you spend time on sex juice.
We do want to talk to some people who follow us on YouTube and iTunes and others, and I do want to implore you folks who thank you again for listening to us on iTunes and downloading us on iTunes. We're currently the number 2 or 3 show on AfterBuzz.
We're up there somewhere.
And
that's
thank you so much. It's a lot of competition out there. A lot of new fall shows. We didn't know that the old Blacklist would somehow still make it back into the top 10, let alone the top 3. Mm. So thank you so much. It really, really helps. helps if for all of our YouTube fans who listen to us and who like us, it would help too if you guys go on iTunes and rate us on iTunes.
We just got one rating this week from Love Justified. Thank you very much,
Love Justified.
Yeah.
We love Justified too. And the Blacklist.
And the Blacklist. Thank you to Rats T, Amanda Henderson, Doris Maynard, Life is Short 214, D Swopes, Miss Lean, Chewy RM, Jess White, Diva 1675, Mahogany 1985, Soprano Ascends, Christine J, Sans 777, Joey Riam, Jamie Nauman, and I think that's, and Lars 2222 DK.
Yes. And on Twitter, there's a bunch of folks, but Juliet, Anthony Cancellieri, I can't remember, Juliet, sorry.
Vanilla Cupcake, you always post some other people.
Kimberly Ambassador, Jenna, Daniel Knopf, Jay, Jane, I don't know. I got nothing else. Maya's name. I don't know. Vanilla Cupcake. Sam I Am.
Yes, Sam I Am.
And, Mike Blanchard, of course. Lucia. And everyone else who I don't see. Shoshana Draper. And what happened?
Nicely done, gentlemen.
Some
of those sounded like names.
Almost. Everyone's name, like I butchered, I'm sure all of you. But thank you all for listening. Thank you for downloading us on iTunes. And thank you for listening on YouTube and commenting on YouTube. We appreciate all the comments on YouTube and iTunes and rating us and all that good stuff. So now.
I got some news, too.
Actual news?
I have actual news.
He's got stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, first of all, Monday nights are really, really competitive. Not just on AfterBuzz, but a very competitive night TV-wise. You got Gotham, Scorpion. Yeah. Those are two new shows that are out that are doing really, really well. The Originals just came back. Sleepy Hollow. So this is the first week, actually, I believe. Well, I don't know if it's the first week, but last week Scorpion was the number one new show, ratings-wise, which I'm also on that After Buzz show. Nice plug. But this week, what's really cool is everything went down, but Blacklist held. So they actually had a 2.8 after The Voice, of course. So they're doing really, really well. They had a 2.7 ratings wise. We know it always goes up with DVRs. So, congratulations to that. Also, James Spader was on Seth Meyers' show last night. And, the interesting thing is he says he knows more about Raymond Reddington and the future plot than viewers might think. So, which I think is very, very interesting. And he talks about what he was looking for in The Blacklist. It's something that was going to be able to sustain for a long period of time, that I would never lose my curiosity. I would never lose a sense of surprise. And the show just does that. It's exciting for me to see a new twist and a new turn when the scripts come out. And then he also says next week's show is just fantastic.
Oh,
absolutely fantastic.
So this guy knows how to promote.
Yeah. So he knows how to promote the darn show. Yeah, yeah. I think he knows how to do it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to watch next week.
I think I'm going to watch it too.
I guess I will.
Yeah, I'm going to watch.
You've convinced me.
All right. Thank you, Spader.
Cool. Is this on Monday then? This is Monday night?
It's Monday night.
So Monday night.
Monday night. 10 o'clock.
On Monday night. Okay.
Yeah.
I can make time on Monday.
Okay.
Thank you, Nando, for having some actual news.
You're welcome.
That was impressive. Yeah. You have news, Joe?
I do not.
Okay. Juliet news? All right. See? Nando?
Oh,
good job.
I own it. You shrank. I own it.
I shrank down.
Let's jump into predictions.
All right, Joe. You can own this.
And now... You're After Buzz TV.
Anyone on YouTube or streaming us can just look at Julia's face when prediction starts. Mm-hmm. It's just awesome.
Julia.
All right. I got some predictions that I'm sure you will all blow major holes in and give me crap about it, but I don't care. First of all, I threw out there last week that I thought Tom could possibly be Lizzie's source. I said it. You poo-pooed it.
What did we do to it? You poo-pooed it.
And now that she's had a quasi sex dream about her dad and Tom,
I'm sticking with that.
She's sticking with it.
She might not know that Tom is her.
Do we poo-poo it or do we poo-poo it?
Poo-poo it.
Hate you guys so much.
Don't hate me. He said it.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
So, do you have poo-poo in the house? I'm sticking to my guns on that I think Tom is Lizzie's source. She just might not know it
via dreams.
Okay. I also think that the hot sniper motel guy works for Berlin. Mm-hmm. And Berlin knows about Red's weakness for Lizzie.
Oh.
And that's exactly what he did with Tom. So this is like Tom 2.0.
Right.
So I think he planted hot motel guy for Lizzie.
Sure.
And you got predictions. I have this little idea rolling around in my head. It's very vague, but I'm going to start throwing it out there.
Okay.
Throw.
I seem to remember a blacklister in season one who did things with people's faces. Right? Who, like, could change the face of someone. Mm. I'm wondering if Red has had some work done. So maybe he's not really the Red they think they're dealing with. But I think he's had...
Because she did say that, right?
Surgery. She did say that.
Naomi did say that.
Yes. And what did like she say? I said,
not as different as you.
Not as different as you.
Yeah.
And that would be a reason that he didn't take her blindfold off when they made that exchange.
But you have all those pictures, all the archival pictures of him as a younger guy.
And he was an FBI agent. And he was an FBI agent.
He could possibly not be the Red they think that they're dealing with. He could be somebody else.
This could be like, Red.
This is Yuri Sokolov, but he's changed. Now like he's Red. Red.
Or maybe he's Lizzie's dad, who died, was Red. Red was
maybe. Real.
And this is the guy who's replaced Red.
So possibly like Kaiser like Soze like action. Dread
Kaiser
Soze.
Verbal Kent.
Anyways, spoiler I'm just alert. Saying.
Okay, I like that.
She deserves an applause.
I think so.
I actually think
that's some good stuff.
That was some good stuff. Yeah, thank you.
One-time deal. Don't ever expect that again.
I think I made a prediction earlier that Lizzie and Wrestler were going to hook up.
You're sexy.
I wonder if the writers at this point are looking at the chemistry between Megan and Diego. The absolutely palpable.
Yes.
The how are these two not screwing? This is. God, a lack of chemistry I've never seen like this on television. So I'm wondering if they're taking a look at this going, can we actually hook these two up? So I'm beginning to second guess my earlier prediction that these two are going to hook up because the chemistry could not be more lacking, in my opinion.
Okay.
So I'm going to say that. And then I'm with you what you're saying about the motel guy, but it would bum me out so much because that would mean Lizzie is so easy. Mentally, she's such an easy mark. Like, all you have to do is be nice to her. And be decent looking. Flip the hat around. Joe Braswell is wearing an L.A. Dodgers hat. For those of you in St. Louis, suck it. It's deep right now.
Okay, sorry.
So I just told the entire city of St. Louis to suck it, and I did it for your hat.
Okay.
So I hope you're happy.
Classy, San Diego.
I'm sorry. Nando, predictions.
All right, this is going to be a weird one. I don't think that the sniper has anything to do with Tom. Here's what I think. I think that Lizzie got that motel from Red. And then Red set her up in that place with this guy because he is involved with future blacklisters. So he's not connected with Lizzie. He's not there because of Lizzie, but rather Lizzie somehow stumbled upon him in the way that Red seems to make everything work.
So maybe this is like Red's motel where he puts people?
Yeah, something like
so
that.
The hotel does have one Red place.
I don't know. I could be completely off the deep end here. But I'm just thinking it can't be that obvious that this guy's, you know, a sniper is following Lizzie around. Because if he wanted Lizzie dead, he would have killed her.
But
so
I don't
really get the whole sniper.
To kill her, he might be there because Tom was with her forever and he didn't kill her. I don't know what the motives are. We still don't know the motives why Tom was put into Lizzie's life, but
fair enough. So you think he might be there to protect her? I could see that too.
Or even just keep an eye on her. I'm not sure, but I believe that
I think it's to keep an eye on protect. As well, but not to poo-poo on your
he does a lot of poo-pooing
on your prediction. Look, my prediction. I know last week I predicted that maybe Naomi is some sort of in league with Berlin and some sort of super double cross. I'm not really
or her daughter.
I'm going to stick with that prediction, but I also now think and I'm fairly convinced that Naomi is actually Lizzie's source somehow. I don't know how or why. But maybe I just somehow think that Lizzie's source is Naomi, and there's some sort of double back.
Nah, I'm a poo-poo then.
Poo-poo. Okay.
That's
what I think. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I think I won predictions this week.
I think you did.
You did win predictions. I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell.
And you can find me on Twitter.
Who are you?
My name is Nando Velasquez. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. And here on other shows like Walking Dead starting next week, Homeland, which had a really awesome premiere this past week.
No spoilers.
Don't tell me,
and Scorpion. I won't say anything.
Flippo.
You can find me at Joe Flippo on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find me, my website is josephsanflippo.com.
Yes. And Julia Carely.
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram with my name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY.
And that's it. Thank you very much. Next week, we'll be back with more Blacklist. Go Dodgers.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. to watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.